Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
We just can't get rid of this Muppet Babies theme we got going on in the office, can we?
When your room feels kind of weird and you wish that you weren't there.
Just close your eyes and make believe, and you can be anywhere.
Okay, we're done.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is the Sound Waves from the Underground podcast, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we catch up with the young men from Holy Water, Buffalo. We welcome Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp, Utah, and talk about a little bit of Tibetan food around town. And we talk to the folks from Farm Forward about their program. We are here welcoming Tommy Bronson from Holy Water Buffalo, representing the other guys in the band today to tell us a little bit about what the band is up to right now. Thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate it.
It's really good to see you.
Tommy, why don't we just delve in? I know people are probably familiar with the band from the last couple of years. You guys have played so much.
Yeah.
You've been around. There's been stories in old issues of Slug. But why don't we get a little caught up on sort of the background? You guys come from Heber City.
Yep.
You've been playing your ass off for at least a couple of years that I know.
About five now, actually.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. How did you guys just kind of first meet? Was it a matter of like being like schoolboy chums?
Definitely.
Or how did you come
together? Yeah. It's kind of sweet because me and our bass player Jeff, he and I were best friends growing up in grade school, and he never played any instruments. We played like hockey together and stuff like that. But he started playing bass like right at the end of high school, and then our drummer Steven, his dad was the band teacher, or is still the band teacher in our high school, Wasatch High School. Him and our keyboardist Zaz, they were like saxophone band nerd buddies, you know.
Okay.
And we kind of actually came together after high school and college and stuff like that, and we just decided, Steven was playing the drums, and we just decided to play, and he didn't go on his mission, and
okay.
It's kind of cool. So
yeah, how difficult is it just, you know, kind of logistically? I mean, obviously you can get in a garage in Heber as easy as you can get in a garage anywhere else and practice and start writing. But, I mean, was it hard to just kind of become a band that could get out and get gigs coming from a smaller town on the in Utah?
We didn't really think of it that way. We just kind of, like, loved playing music, and I had a bunch of songs that I had written. And we actually rehearsed at a non-denominational church in Heber. It's right by, like, the orange Kubota tractor place. But that's kind of where we've honed all of our songs and stuff like that. Big PA system, and, like, you can play there till 5 in the morning if you want to. And,
oh, nice.
And it's cool. Like, we just kind of started practicing, and we probably rehearsed for 8 or 9 months before we even decided to book a show. You know what I mean? So we used to have an old guitar player that played with us a long time ago. So there was two guitarists and then a drummer and a bass player. And Zaz, our keyboardist, wasn't in the band.
Okay.
And that kind of happened later on when the guitarist quit. And we were like, oh, what do we do? And
were you guys of sort of a like mind in terms of a musical vision or what you wanted to do? Or did everybody really come in from all these sort of different backgrounds in terms of their own taste? Then you guys found a sound through kind of melding
it
all
fell
those.
Together. It kind of fell together. It was like divine appointment or something. You know, I don't know. We met each other, and we all are like-minded in the way that we really love music and we don't want to stop, you know. And it's not like an ego thing or anything like that. We just love each other. We're brothers, and we play with each other, and it's fun. So
well, I know the first album came out what, like, December 2011, like
2010. Yeah.
Okay, so it's been a couple of years.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, you guys won like the Velour Battle of the Bands
right around time ago,
before that even.
Yeah.
And the album was really well received. I mean, not just here in Utah and elsewhere. I mean, can you talk about sort of how life in the band evolved when you finally, you had this record out and you had these gigs coming?
It just kind of started falling into place, and then we met our manager, Bro, who just kind of approached us, and he's the one that helps us with all of our shows. And it just kind of, it gets harder, you know, when you're first a band and you're just playing in your rehearsal space and you're not expecting anything, you know. It's like, it just gets better and better, and you're just like, holy shit, this is awesome, you know. Like, I can't get enough of this, you know. And then after the album releases, and then show after show after show, it just kind of piles up, you know. And it gets harder, you know. You have to work harder and play harder and rehearse more, even though you're playing a lot of shows and stuff. So,
Bro, we have you here with us, so I'm going to throw a question at you.
Sure.
From a management sort of perspective, you have a young, kind of up-and-coming rock band that obviously has some great songs, and they've got a stage presence, you know. What do you do with that from the management perspective to get a band out of, not just out of Heber, but even just a Utah band? Because you've gone outside of the state, you know, with the bands toured some. I mean, is it hard?
Yeah, the Northwest stuff out to Colorado, it is definitely hard. I find that a lot of people, even when they say they're the booking agent for a club, they have a hard time getting back to you because they get inundated with stuff. So you just have to keep plugging away. And, you know, social media is a good way to get stuff out there. You know, getting these guys to practice. Like Tommy was saying, I mean, when we play so many shows, you know, you get home and rehearsing new songs and practicing and stuff like that, you know, it's hard to do. But these guys are great at it. So the combination of that stuff and just getting out there and having people spread the word and, you know, selling merchandise, people see our shirts around, you know, right. I even hear from, you know, I'm from New York originally. Someone saw a Holy Water Buffalo shirt at an airport, that kind of thing. And so the word spreads. The music is great. The guys are great people. They love talking to the fans. And it just it grows organically. And you also have to keep pressing away at it, you know.
Where are some of the places, Tommy, that maybe, you know, either clubs here in Utah or towns you've toured to a little bit that have really kind of responded maybe, you know, noticeably to you guys? Like, damn, we're making...
Well, one really big one in here in Utah is the State Room. Those guys are just the most awesome guys, like the two owners, and they're so sweet to us, and they're always hooking us up with a good national act to open for, and they're just always like, they're trying to pick their brains of like, they're trying to get us to actually play our own show there so we have our own night and we can get our own bands and stuff like that. But that place is awesome. Those guys are always so sweet to us, and the guys from Performance Audio, it's just like, I'm a sound guy and like a technical guy, and I like that, so I always introduce myself to all the sound guys, and I like to learn from people, and the guys from Performance Audio, a lot of those guys work for the State Room and Red Butte Gardens, and just kind of is like building friends and networking like that.
Up from there. Nice.
If you keep your mouth shut all the time and have your arms crossed, then no one's going to want to talk to you, you know what
That's
I mean?
That's right. Harder to kind of make those connections, certainly.
It doesn't really happen.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on with the band right now. This is going to be going out there to the world in early July 2013. You got new music that's already floating around
a little bit.
Is it a full new album coming, an EP?
We're thinking about, we're working, we have a lot of songs, like our drummer Steven's been writing a lot of songs, and we're going to kind of do like a little cross-writing and stuff like that, build up a whole new album, and hopefully within another year or a year and a half we'll have that.
Excellent.
But it's not like we're sitting there waiting for someone to come along and help us or anything like that, but I feel like you can record an awesome badass sounding album and spend a whole ton of money on it, and if you don't have anyone to help you distribute it or stuff like that, you just sell copies out of the back of your van, you know, and it's just like it's
like
kind of a
get
waste.
Old after a while.
Well, it's just a waste. Like, it's a waste of that album, you know what I mean? Like, if it doesn't get out to people and stuff like that, then it's just kind of like, you already recorded it. You can't, you know, it's like...
can't go backwards.
You can't go back,
Is it noticeable to you, like, an evolution just of your guys' skills after having played so much after that first record and toured a little bit? Is it a noticeably different process when you record now than 3 years ago, say?
Yeah, well, when we recorded our first album, it was with our pal Richard Souther, who produced it, and it was really awesome. It was a really good experience for us, and since then we've just grown, like, as musicians, as songwriters, like, in our stage presence and the power and everything and all of our gear and collecting all that stuff, but it's like a like-minded, it's like we're four different guys, but we make one sound, you know? It's not just like guitar riffs with a solo over the top of it kind of thing, you know? It's all one thing, you know? We try to, that's our whole thing. We just want to be one and show people that kind of
forward one powerful sound.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Well, we're actually going to play one of the new tracks that's come out. We're going to play Better to Remain. Can you tell us a little bit just about maybe the process of putting this song together?
Actually, these two, we record Better to Remain and another song, Lamborghinis in Space, and we did it with a producer here in Salt Lake. His name's Joel Pack. He owns Rigby Road Studios, and he's just the most badass dude. He's such a sweetheart. We actually met at the Beer Fest last year, he and I did, and we just hit it off because we're geared nerds, and, but he's just felt passionate about our band and the way he produced these songs, like compared to our first album, it's like rock and roll, like punch you in the nuts, you know what I mean? Like,
nice.
It's powerful, it's good. And another thing about Better to Remain, we recorded, we made a music video of the song as we kind of recorded it with Joel. We did it a little bit in Salt Lake in the studio, but that was all indoors, and then the whole video is all outdoors in Heber, just all around the valley. And our friend Stevie J with Wild Wasatch Media, he was the one who kind of forefronted that, and also our friend Mike Alvarado, he got us the gear and everything like that, and it is a really badass music video if you go on YouTube and check it out.
I remember you guys had like a really awesome slick one or two from the first record.
Yeah, that was just our first one, yeah. Nice. But this one's really cool. This one's really good.
Let's play a little Better to Remain. This is a new Holy Water Buffalo track. So that was the song called Better to Remain. That's a brand new Holy Water Buffalo track. And you can go download that song for free, as well as the other song, Lamborghinis in Space, at holywaterbuffalo.com. Tommy, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me,
we'll
man.
We'll definitely have you back to catch up as you guys progress. And I can't wait to see you guys play some this summer around town.
Man.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks, Slug. Love you guys.
Once again, we welcome Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp, Utah, to drop serious knowledge on our sorry asses here. And we're kind of delving into a little exotic fare this time, Jeffrey. First, welcome.
Thank you.
Always.
No pressure.
That's right.
Drop some wisdom
gonna
now.
Dropping knowledge on us. We are going to delve into the world of Tibetan food, of all things, here in Utah. And unlike, say, Thai or even Indian. It hasn't completely exploded to where there's one in every strip mall across the valley yet.
Right. Tibetan is not sushi.
That's right. It's not sushi. But there are some damn fine examples out there, and we're going to hear about some, well, all right now.
Yeah. So I thought, just to preface the conversation, we would talk just for a second about what Tibetan food really is. I mean, we were just saying before we hit the record button, Tibetan food, I mean, Tibet is kind of right in the middle of...
the Tibetan grub. You know, Tibet sits up there in the mountains, right? You're in between Asia and India, and you're way up in the air.
Yeah. So if you may have been to a Tibetan place, and if you didn't recognize some of the Tibetan stuff on the menu, you know, it could be like a Himalayan Nepalese restaurant, could be Indian food. A lot of these Tibetan places do a buffet and lunch like an Indian place traditionally does. But there are some dishes. I think most famously momos.
Yeah.
Probably the thing that you look for with Tibetan food, which is like a little dumpling.
Delicious.
There's like a noodle soup that's really kind of commonplace. So we're going to talk about those and then talk about some places that have aspects of those. So first up, Everest Tibetan Restaurant. There's your first clue. It's right in the name.
That's right.
123 East, 200 South. Has 3.5 out of 5 after 16 reviews. Dustin B. says, the food is well worth going in for dinner with some friends and loading up a table with lots of various exotic dishes. And they do a lunch buffet as well, but actually there was another reviewer who was like, you know, for me, for my money, the better menu is actually dinner.
Yeah.
So you load up your dinner with
and
a bunch of
exotic
dishes.
I've heard that from like some foodies in general. Like, you want to get the made-to-order for you to get the real sample. And as much as I love a buffet because you get to try so many different little flavors, and this is some really flavorful food, some Tibetan stuff, but... that's good advice.
Yeah.
Everest Tibetan. All right.
Yeah. Next up, House of Tibet, 145 East, 13th South. That's 4 out of 5 after 27 reviews. The Yelper Gen L says, the vegetable momos, we were talking about this, the vegetable momos are delicious and the vegetable dishes are great. They do takeout. They have a buffet as well that you can dine in.
That's another good thing about Tibetan food for people who aren't privy. It's heavily vegetarian because of the Buddhist factor, and there are some amazingly tasty vegetarian dishes that even meat eaters would be like way into because it's so hearty.
Yeah, absolutely. Good absolutely stuff. Yeah. In fact, when we talk about some of the great vegetarian places in Salt Lake City, a lot of these just come up because of what you just said.
Yeah.
So thirdly, the other major Tibetan place, Cafe Shambhala, which is 382 4th Avenue. That's 4 out of 5 stars after 37 reviews.
Ooh.
And again, Brandon R. shouts up the momos and says they are as good as everyone says. Better, actually. If you don't know momos, they are the doughy stuffed balls that Master Ishu trains Panda with.
Oh,
Kung Fu Panda.
Okay. There you go.
I'm not sure that's an exact
mushy
scientific...
mushy stuffed balls. I don't know if that's a good sales pitch,
Master
considering they're delicious.
I spent a long time testing that movie.
Yeah.
And then he throws in at the end, Brandon says, I would fight for these too.
Nice.
So up in the avenues, if you're up there. Now, there's a couple other places that do have some Tibetan items on the menu that do sort of that Nepalese, Himalayan...
yeah, fusioning things together there. Right?
That's it. And the first one by name would be Himalayan Kitchen. We've talked about them here when we were talking about Indian...
that's right.
...food, Nepalese food. So 360 South State Street, 4 out of 5. They have 120 reviews.
Ooh.
4 out of 5 stars. They're doing it right. And the service, I think we mentioned, if your drink goes dry... I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
there's been an earthquake.
That's right.
Someone's
died. It does
not
happen. And they also have a mean momo among their dishes.
Yeah,
pretty
that's
mean
one of the,
momos.
Yeah, that's one of the Tibetan items that they definitely have. And then the other one we're going to talk about is Kathmandu. Kathmandu has two locations, one on Highland. This one is the other one on 212 South, 700 East. 4.5 out of 5 stars after 32 reviews. Elena I says, so I ordered vegan vegetarian tupka, which is that, well, she explains, a spicy or mild Tibetan noodle soup. It was loaded with ginger and garlic, broccoli, cabbage, chili peppers, and tomatoes, floated in a cilantro and cumin-flavored broth.
Mm.
There was very little oil in the soup, so it was filling but not heavy. I've been to the Himalayas, where I had this soup several times. Each time it was a bit different, sometimes bland and sometimes spicy. The version here, she says about Kathmandu, is as good as any I had in the Himalayas.
Whoa. That is a ringing endorsement if I ever heard one.
That's it.
As good as she had in the Himalayas.
That's
awesome.
It.
Awesome. And then Kathmandu, that one there on 7th East and 2nd-ish
South. Yeah.
That's relatively new. It's in a little, where Jed's Barbershop is, that little sort of
new
thing in the middle of the parking lot there.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome. Great, another option downtown.
I think officially they call it Kathmandu 2.
There we go.
Because the original Kathmandu would be out on Highland.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's a quickie rundown. I'm impressed that so many people reviewed a lot of these places. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, man. I tell you what, and it's funny as you go through and read reviews of like a certain kind of food, I found the same kind of people had been to all of them, kind of trying them all out in town. So I mean, that's really the great thing is like I honestly I've only had Tibetan food like maybe twice in my life, but there are people who are who definitely have been more, who have been to the Himalayas.
Yeah, right.
I have not been to the Himalayas. Yeah, so. I've been to the Sierras in California.
Nice.
So
excellent.
I could probably
that's great stuff.
Yeah, I don't know what that helps me pick out any kind of food. But anyway, that's what the great thing is that some people know a lot more, and they share their thoughts, and you get to go through and read and find really cool stuff you had no idea was there.
That's right. So obviously you can catch up with all these reviews of these places on Yelp.com/Salt Lake City. Salt-Lake-City.
Yeah, just hit up Yelp and it should sense that you're in Salt Lake City.
That's right. And they can, of course, just follow you at Yelp Utah, and you'll be dropping more knowledge on a day-to-day, maybe minute-by-minute basis on Twitter.
I'll be dropping wisdom bombs.
All over. And Facebook. Go find Yelp Salt Lake City on Facebook, yep. And boom, reviews of the day, all kinds of goodies, special events.
All kinds of stuff going on. We just had our International Supper Club. We do that once a month. Anybody's welcome to attend that. You just RSVP on Yelp. Come on out.
Wow.
We eat dinner. We try a different ethnicity every month. Maybe we'll have Tibetan food next month. We'll see.
What was your most recent?
Korean.
Oh, Korean. Excellent. Korean barbecue kind of thing.
Yeah. We hit up a Korea house.
Nice.
And had some barbecue and had some tofu soup and some stuff. You know, it was great because, again, I've only had Korean food a handful of times.
Right.
And I was with somebody who's like, oh, here's the deal. And she basically, I got to give a shout out to Yvonne L., Yelper Yvonne L. She basically just orders for me now every time we go someplace.
Nice.
We had dim sum, and I was like, you know what? Why don't you order for the table?
We might have to bring her in for one of these appearances here on the Soundwaves from the Underground someday. Well, as always, Jeffrey, thank you so much for coming in. And everyone, fire up your Yelp Utah and get knowledgeified. I'm making up words now.
What you said, do it.
Thanks. This is your weekly daily calendar for the week of July 2nd through July 8th, and so of course it includes that wonderful Independence Day holiday on the 4th. As always, you'll want to go to slugmag.com every damn day. Check out the listings that are being added all the time for all the best events going on in Salt Lake City and the surrounding areas. For a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add quality content to your own listings, but you can put in a basic listing for free. I cruised through this thing and found a lot of good shows this week, starting on Tuesday, July 2nd. Say Anything and Isley are playing it in the venue. Probably my least favorite venue, but two of my favorite live bands to see. I've seen them both multiple times. I believe one of the Isley gals is married to one of the Say Anything boys these days, so it makes sense that they're touring together. Isley's one of those bands I saw at South by Southwest a good decade ago, and they totally blew me away because they were like a little kiddie band of girls rocking out. Now, many years later, they're still going. I'm happy to see them back on the scene. Wednesday, July 3rd, Pat Benatar at the Sandy City Amphitheater, and I'm unusually excited for this show, mostly because of the Fast Times Ridgemont High connection to Pat Benatar, all the girls in high school back in the early 80s dressing like Pat Benatar. Still got an awesome voice, though. Neil Giraldo, her husband, an amazing guitar player, actually the man who played on Rick Springfield's Jesse's Girl, I found out in that Dave Grohl Sound City documentary, so the guy plays some mean guitar all over the place. Thursday, July 4th, I will be up in Park City for the show at Deer Valley. Los Lobos, one of my personal favorites, the badass band out of East LA, along with Alejandro Escovedo opening up. That's going to be a blast. That's at Deer Valley. And of course, there will be fireworks afterwards, somewhere in Park City, no doubt. Friday, July 5th, it's Get Off of My Cloud, the Songs of the Rolling Stones. That is the Provo Rooftop Concert Series selection. Paul Jacobson, the man who puts these shows together, put together an all-star cast of musicians, some of your favorites from a myriad local bands, and they're doing the Stones this year. I went last year when they did Tom Petty, and it was a blast to watch all these different people getting on stage, knocking out all these great songs. The Rolling Stones obviously have a ridiculously deep catalog, and hey, this show is free, not $400 like a regular Rolling Stones show, so fun to be had. Opening up is the National Parks, who we played a little clip from last week on the old podcast. On July 5th, Old Crow Medicine Show, a fine little bluegrass band. They have sold out Red Butte Garden, but there'll be some tickets kicking around up there. They're always a great live show. Same night, Dick Dale at the Royal. That should be amazing. The man who played all those great surf guitar licks that are slathered all over the Pulp Fiction soundtrack, among other places. Mo, jam band extraordinaire from the East Coast, they're playing at the Depot. So clearly, the 5th of July is a big night. That's Friday night. And then Saturday the 6th, Portugal the Man makes their return to town. Another great live band. They're playing up at Park City Live. So if you have a good excuse to get up there and get to Park City, there's a couple good shows. And of course, the new issue of Slug will be hitting the streets that week on July 5th. So keep an eye out for that. Any place cool. That's your weekly daily calendar. Be sure to tune in to slugmag.com every day and check out what's going on in your town and beyond. Lady Murasaki originally formed in July of 2011, but they've had pretty much an ever-changing lineup ever since then, based around lead singer Amber Taniuchi on vocals and guitar. In February of 2012, they released their first self-titled EP. Now they're finally following it up with an aptly named EP called Summer Fling that came out in June of this year. This is a song called Baby Hit the Beats off of that brand new Summer Fling EP. About the band, be sure to check out our March 2013 issue when they were one of the featured localized bands. And to find out more about Lady Murasaki and all of their shows coming up, visit them online at facebook.com/Lady Murasaki Band. Farm Forward is a nonprofit advocacy and consulting group that originally formed in Portland, Oregon before they moved the operation right down here into Salt Lake City. The group works to shed the light on factory farming and all the economic, destructive, abusive, and all-around horrible practices that goes into factory farming. They serve as a consulting group for people who are interested. They provide information to the media. They work with activists and authors, all to get the message out. Slug writer Leandra Jeff sat down with the organization's founders, Michael McFadden and Ben Goldsmith, to talk about Farm Forward and what they're going to be doing next.
First, just give me like a quick overview of what Farm Forward is, kind of like a synopsis.
Farm Forward is a small nonprofit. It's been around for about 5 years, and we work in animal agriculture. Mm-hmm. We pursue a variety of different strategies to change the way America eats and farms. We do advocacy work, informing consumers about where animal products come from. Mm-hmm. We work with farmers to help them improve their operations and increase animal welfare. And we work with other nonprofits and really anyone who shares our mission and wants to improve the state of animal agriculture in this country.
So is it like a nationwide thing or is it small here in the state? How does that work?
We work nationwide, and in fact, we've even done small projects internationally. We're interested in making the biggest impact we possibly can, and we will go anywhere we have to in order to make a difference.
So you said you focus on animal agriculture. What is your main focus at the moment within that spectrum?
You know, we really pursue a lot of different things at once, especially for such a small organization. We do everything from consulting with large national and international nonprofits, advising them on animal welfare policy, even helping them with day-to-day administration. As I mentioned, work with animal farmers and help them improve their businesses, improve their practices, mm-hmm. help them find solutions to problems, including, you know, helping them find places to sell their products.
Right.
And we do advocacy work, including what we have going right now is a Kickstarter campaign, actually.
Okay.
People can see it at buyingpoultry.com. There's a link to the Kickstarter campaign, but buyingpoultry.com is a consumer resource that will help consumers understand the difference between various confusing labels on poultry products
right.
to get to the bottom of what is and is not humane. And it'll provide suggestions for avoiding factory farming.
How do you help market the food produced, or in other words, how do you get it from the farmers into the hands of consumers?
We haven't spent much time over the years helping farmers reach consumers specifically. We really work with farmers to help them improve the standards for their animals
mm-hmm.
And to help them solve problems more on the production side
okay.
than making that connection. But all of that's changing now that we've begun to create buyingpoultry.com. This will really be the first time we're introducing consumers to these amazing farmers we work with every
mm-hmm.
day. And we're really looking forward to that. So at the moment, you know, we've made small connections, but mostly with farmers and distributors or farmers and retailers. But we're really looking forward to pointing out some of these really incredible farms around the country, talking about what they do differently that's so important, telling consumers where they can find those products.
And then you said you're on the production side, so do you have difficulties competing with industrial farms in any way, or how does that touch on your projects?
At Farm Forward, we're looking to replace industrial animal agriculture with something that's more sensible and more sustainable and more humane. It's not so much an issue of competition at this point, because the infrastructure in this country is so centered around industrial agriculture. Really, at this point, we're working on creating an alternative infrastructure
mm-hmm.
that can support a different kind of agriculture. Unfortunately, when it comes to poultry, for example, which I think is one of the most, I think it's probably the most industrialized animal product that's out there,
mm-hmm.
no matter how much money I have, and no matter how interested and concerned I am, I may not be able to find a non-factory farm poultry product in my area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge problem. You know, I think people don't want to see animals suffer necessarily.
Right.
I think consumers are looking for more and more information about where their food comes from. And when it comes to poultry, unfortunately, often what we have to tell them is there really isn't another option yet, which is why we need consumers to help us
mm-hmm.
create this alternative infrastructure so that we can begin to produce something more humane, more sensible.
So Farm Forward works with GAP, is that how you say it?
Global Animal Partnership, yeah.
To ensure humane practices are being used, what is GAP, and then what system do they use to judge certification standards?
GAP, or Global Animal Partnership, is an international standards-setting body. They create a set of standards for animal welfare that is used by a professional auditor to go to a farm and evaluate the level of welfare that's being met on that farm. So, you know, if you've got somebody who's just very knowledgeable about animal agriculture or animal welfare, and you send them to a farm and ask them for their take on whether or not what's going on is humane or inhumane, you know, you could take their word for it, but that's not really something that you could use reliably or authoritatively to say something is or is not meeting a particular standard. So we have to have these standard setting bodies that create the standards to say, you know, if you're achieving XYZ, you are doing something that is relatively humane compared to everything else that's going on. GAP is one of these standard setting organizations. They don't actually do the audits themselves, but a third party auditor, professional auditor, uses the GAP standard to go to a farm. And in this case, they give the farm a rating on a scale from 1 to 5, or even in the best case, a 5+.
Okay, so 1 is low and 5 is high?
That's right.
Okay.
Yep. And a 5 or a 5+ farm is really exceptional. There aren't that many of them in the United States. But one of the exciting things about GAP is that farmers have incentive to move up this scale. So there are many other animal welfare certifications. A very popular one is Certified Humane. Farm Forward hasn't chosen GAP over another certification because, you know, we think GAP is necessarily the best or anything else. We're excited about GAP and we're excited about this tiered structure, but there are other certifications that are great as well. I'll just use Certified Humane as an example to illustrate this difference of what I think makes GAP special. So for a one-step certification, a certification that you can either apply to your product or not, once you achieve that standard of welfare, once you've done all of the things that mean you can use that certification, there's really not much incentive to climb any higher.
Right.
If I'm doing well enough to put a label that says humane on my product, why would I do anything else if it costs money and doesn't really make any more money?
Exactly.
But with a tiered program like GAP, you give farmers incentive and can reward them for being increasingly and incrementally more humane.
Right.
GAP products are available at the moment almost exclusively at Whole Foods, but all Whole Foods globally sell Global Animal Partnership step rated products.
And are they labeled as such?
Yes.
Okay.
At the meat counter. Mm-hmm. So none of the packaged meat products apply, you know, their food bar, that stuff isn't GAP rated. But if you're buying meat from the meat counter at Whole Foods, all of that meat, well, actually not all of that, GAP doesn't certify lamb or fish, but the other meat products at those counters has been step rated, and you should see it right there on the tag.
Recently, I was looking up some stuff online, and the book Eating Animals is written by a board member. So that's becoming a success now. How has that, or has it, helped you reach or come closer to your goals in any way?
It absolutely has. Assisting with some of the research for the book Eating Animals by Jonathan Safran Foer was one of the first things we did at Farm Forward. We continue to support authors in writing all kinds of things about animal welfare, but this was our first, and honestly, it's one of the things I'm most proud of. I think it's one of the most comprehensive accounts of what's going on in America, on farms in America, that you'll find. It's been a bestseller.
Mm-hmm.
It's been successful internationally, and I think it's opened, it's started a conversation in a lot of households between friends, and I hear from people all the time who say that it's really changed the way they think about these issues, and that's very exciting. So I think, you know, Farm Forward is mentioned in the book just briefly. Some people find us that way. But I think the main way Eating Animals has helped us achieve our mission is just by continuing this conversation, giving people additional information and a new perspective right. about how to think about these issues and make these choices for themselves.
How would somebody go about getting involved or finding more information about Farm Forward?
Well, I hope people will get involved, and people can find us online at farmforward.com. I definitely encourage everyone who's interested in these issues to check out buyingpoultry.com. And in general, I always just ask people to continue to think about this. You know, I think animal welfare matters. I think all of us have a pretty inherent and innate sense that animals can suffer. Right. And probably do suffer. And I think we can do a bit better. And in order to do a bit better, I think all of us really have to contribute.
Right.
And I hope everyone continues to at least think about this and at most take steps to get involved.
For more information on Farm Forward, including their consulting work and supporting their efforts, visit them online at farmforward.com. Thank you for listening to the Sound Waves from the Underground podcast. And for all things Slug Magazine, be sure to visit us at slugmag.com, and you'll want to do that every day. The Red Bennies, long-standing, awesome local rock band, are calling it quits. We'd like to hear some of your fondest memories of the group, some of their past shows and adventures, and we'd like to talk about them in an upcoming episode of the podcast. You can either send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or give us a call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Drop us a good story about the Red Bennies. We just might play it on the air. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. Executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan and technical design by Kate Colgan. Be sure to fire us up again next week when the Sound Waves of the Underground podcast will talk Alt Press Fest, the Damn These Hills Film Festival, as well as the Ragnar Relay Race. Thanks for listening.